Can central banks really fix this? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The Federal Reserve has just cut interest rates by 0.5%. For this to happen between formal policy meetings is highly unusual and an indication of the urgency driving the decision. What's called the Fed funds rate, the main way central bankers add or remove liquidity in the financial system, was already low, and it'll now run between just 1% and 1.25%. The Fed's policymaking committee was unanimous in its decision today. The Fed says it will continue to closely monitor developments with the coronavirus and use appropriate tools to support the economy. Karen Petru is managing partner of the economic consulting firm Federal Financial Analytics in Washington. Good morning.
Hello, David.
Okay, surprise. Not even after a scheduled meeting of Fed policymakers. Are you, Karen, reassured they're taking action, or maybe scared they even had to do this?
I'm troubled that they did, because I really think that the Fed is responding not to the economy, but to the market. And I really hate to see the central bank continue to exercise what used to be called the Greenspan put. Now it's become the Powell put. When markets are shaky, the Fed steps in and rescues the traders. That's not what a central bank is for.
Yeah, because now the traders are going to know the Fed is watching their back very closely.
A market that runs on moral hazard runs on fumes. I would like to see some market recognition. If we're supposed to have efficient markets with traders recognizing forward-looking values, that's not what we're doing. Everybody's trading on the Fed, and that is ultimately a dangerous game.
And you've had some questions about whether or not cutting interest rates actually helps the problem at hand, which is trying to help the world economy through concerns about the coronavirus.
I think it has virtually nothing to do with it, unless the Fed figures out how to get in the face mask manufacturing business. But what the Fed is supposed to do is supply liquidity to the financial market and ensure a stable economy by way of maximum employment and price stability. At this point, there's no reason to intervene. Now, I know people will argue, well, you need to intervene early because it takes a while for monetary policy to transit through the economy. But the economy's problems have nothing to do with the cost of money, which is already at extra record lows. It has to do with real world contagion and a virus. A 0.5 point isn't going to cure anybody. It just isn't.
Karen Petru is co-founder and managing partner of Federal Financial Analytics in Washington. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Amazon is cracking down on third-party stores for selling coronavirus-related products at inflated prices. Company says it's recently blocked or removed tens of thousands of listings for things like face masks or hand sanitizer. Marketplace's Marielle Segarra reports.
On Amazon, some third-party sellers have been charging hundreds of dollars for a couple small bottles of hand sanitizer or a box of protective face masks. Dana Radcliffe, who teaches business ethics at Cornell, says Amazon was smart to ban these listings because customers do not like price gouging.
People have a very strong reaction to it. They feel that they're being taken unfair advantage of. So that's going to reflect upon the platform.
Thing is, many economists say it's a bad idea to set rules around price gouging, like limiting price hikes during a public health crisis or a hurricane. One reason, when prices are low, it's easier for people to hoard. Michael Salinger teaches economics at Boston University.
You'll see people loading up their carts with far more than they would if the price were higher. And the consequence of their doing that is that people who get to the store later aren't able to buy anything.
It is hard to say exactly what qualifies as price gouging versus simple supply and demand, and hard for companies like Amazon to draw the line. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
With Super Tuesday top of mind this week, we wanted to give you an offer so super that you would not want to miss it. Give $30 today to get our brand new Marketplace t-shirt designed especially for super fans like you. Now, your support is so important to what we do, and now we need you more than ever. Become a Marketplace investor and cast your vote for independent journalism. Donate today at marketplace.org. Thank you.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
There are longer-term challenges than coronavirus in the quest for electricity that doesn't contribute to climate change. Wind turbines and solar panels are useful. Too bad it's so hard to store excess power from the windy and sunny times. Well, a team from MIT has been doing some calculations, and they've sketched out a way that big hydroelectric dams that already exist in Quebec, Canada, could be thought of as giant storage batteries. John Parsons is a senior lecturer at MIT's Sloan School of Management and co-author of this study. Welcome.
Delighted.
All right, so Quebec, Canada has a big old system of hydroelectric dams. It sends power down to us in the United States. If you made this electricity flow a two-way street, how would that help?
Well, I think what it really helps is looking towards the future when we try to really reach these decarbonization targets that we've set. One of the ways we'll achieve those targets is with a large amount of wind and solar capacity, but the wind and solar resources fluctuate. So we have to find a way to manage this fluctuation of power in New England and New York. And one way to manage that is to trade with Quebec and use their hydro capacity as a kind of battery. In the hours when our solar and wind generation is plentiful, we can ship some power up to Quebec and they can use our power and let their reservoirs refill. And in the hours when the wind and solar is not very plentiful here down in New England, we can flow even more hydropower down from Quebec.
Okay, so it's not like the Canadians would use U.S. electricity to power pumps to put more water back in their dams. The Canadians might use it to power whatever they have to power, but they could let the water accumulate in the dams.
That's exactly right. They just store more of their own water in the hours when we export power to them, and then they save it for the hours when we really need it the most.
What do you make of the criticism, though? Some environmentalists worry that if a scheme like yours were successful, it would take the pressure off of building the actual new renewable energy resources.
Well, the way things are right now, the hydropower that we get from Quebec is a substitute for other types of clean power down here in New England. But we're trying to look forward, look a little bit beyond the current horizon and say, what's the situation, say, in 2050 when we expect we'll have installed a lot more solar and wind? So this is really a way to make that generation from solar and wind useful, and changing the utilization so that we get the most out of what we've got in place right now.
John Parsons is also research affiliate at the MIT Center for Energy and Environmental Policy Research. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And that Amazon story before referenced hoarding during this time of pestilence. Well, in Germany, they have a word for that, Hamsterkauf. Hamster buying, the way little hamsters run around loading up their cheeks for lean times ahead. Der Spiegel reports signs of hamster buying of canned goods, pasta, toilet paper there. Germany has about 129 coronavirus cases. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money.
Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.